All right. Now it says that we're live. Give us a second here. And yep, it looks like we're popping up on the internet. All right. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Eric?
All right, everybody. My name is Eric Graziano. Some of you may or may not know me from my X channel. I'm known as Ancient Epoch or Ancient Hypothesis. I also have a YouTube channel that I try to propagate with videos when I have the opportunity. I'm a tool design engineer. I'm 51 years old. I've been doing that for over 30 years now. And I've had a interest in the ancient past, you know, since basically the early 90s, or maybe even more when I was a childhood. I think everybody at one point or another saw the pyramids when they were little, and it's something that always was like a beacon in the back of my mind. But it all sort of coalesced with Graham Hancock's series of books back in the day, Heaven's Mirror, Fingerprints of the Gods. And I read those books, and I just thought that this was the most fascinating thinker of my generation, because nobody made me quite look at the world the same way as Graham did in those times when I was looking at those books. You know, just seeing the facts of the constellations being mirrored on the ground by these ancient monuments, to me, really just said something like, wow, okay, something was going on here. And it's obviously much more than what we're taught in school. I think, you know, I remember being taught in school that they decided to build the pyramids because when the sun shone through the clouds, it came out in a diagonal shape like a pyramid. And so they were inspired by that, and that's how they decided to make pyramids. And I don't even know that anyone talks about that anymore, but that was something that was popularized like in the late 80s or something. So I'm kind of a old school guy, you know, being born in the 70s. So I have being a Gen Xer. So I have a long history with this that goes back. And basically I had this stuff all in the background. You know, I didn't really do anything with it. It was just a tacit interest of mine that I would follow things here or there. You know, I read other books by Robert Bouval and Robert Schock and these guys, that whole kind of clique from the 90s, John Anthony West, all those guys. That's the nucleus of where I got my interest and most of my original information from. And, you know, I really didn't do much with it until, quite honestly, Jimmy Corsetti made it on an episode of Joe Rogan, I don't know how many years ago, and he was talking about some of the things that I remembered or knew about from Graham's books. And I put on a couple of his videos on YouTube. I didn't watch them all, but I saw what he was doing. And I thought to myself, wow, look at this guy. You know, he's done very well for himself. He's made it on Joe Rogan. He's essentially talking about the same things that used to interest me from the same people that influenced me at the time. And, you know, Ancient Aliens has been a running popular series over the years. It's sort of dwindling down now. But back in its heyday, I did used to watch it because they would talk about the sites I was always interested in. They would talk about these ancient cultures I was always interested in, and they would reference some of the books that I had read. But then at the end, they would always chintz out and just, you know, ooh, it's aliens, right? And so it would be interesting for the 90% of it that you're going over the sites, you're going over this information, you're learning all these things. And but then they just sort of trip over and fall on their heads and say aliens. And I thought to myself, you know what? I could do better than just saying aliens. You know, I've been studying this stuff for a long time. I've been looking at this stuff for a long time. I bet I can come up with better ideas than aliens. I don't think I could do any worse than aliens. So I said, let me, you know, put my hat in the ring and, you know, put my ideas out there, put my thoughts out there about all these different topics, all these different sites. And so that's how it's begun. I will say I don't follow a lot of the, I learned now over the last 2-3 years that there's a lot of current voices, right? Jimmy being one of them, other people. I don't follow Jimmy. It's no disrespect. I don't follow a lot of the current ancient history space. I don't follow Uncharted X. I don't follow Ben. I don't follow any of those guys because I don't want my ideas poisoned by their ideas. That's the way I look at it. I want to look at things with my own fresh approach that, therefore, nobody can say that, oh, he bit this off of this guy and he bit this idea off of that guy. Yeah. I can say that when, and even if we do, our streams do cross, so to speak, and we align on the same topic, I can say we arrive there independently. And that's something that I find gives validity to something is when you land on something independently, like this guy, Collins, apparently he has some type of theory that the Denisovans were sort of the inspiration, if not the oral traditions that led people to come up with the ideas of like Nephilim or the Anunnaki or anything, things like that, because, you know, religions, whatever religion they are, and I think people get confused about ancient Sumeria, and they basically because of ancient aliens and all this other stuff, that this was a human created religion that they created, and within that human created religion, they had gods and they had rules and they had it's just like any other religion. Yeah. Just because it's mysteriously written with cuneiform on tablets doesn't make it any more magical than being written with stick figure letters that we recognize on papyrus or paper. So the idea of Nephilim or the idea of the Anunnaki, these great giant people that we mated with, maybe this is some type of human memory of the Denisovans because they were the largest primate amongst all our primates that we are aware of. Their molars are about 2/3 the size of a Neanderthal. We have skull fragments. Curiously, we don't have much of them, which is the real fascinating thing. Like where, you know, we have their DNA. A good portion of us have their DNA. Some don't. And as you've pointed out, there's people who cherry pick that for negative reasons. So I won't really get into it too much, but where did these people go? You know, so that's something that has been on my radar as far as the our evolution of our species.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Corsetti actually mentioned that possibility of Nephilim being some distant memory of us thinking of or us interbreeding with Denisovans. Or Neanderthal, he said, and of course archaeology Twitter crucified him for it because it came out of his mouth. So be careful what you say because now this is what happens when you don't watch other people. I'm just giving you a hard time, but now you're going to get yelled at for it. Everybody's going to come and be like, "Oh,
I don't mind getting yelled at. You know, come yell at me. I mean, I'll tell you where I live." You can come here and I'll smack you around. I'm not afraid of these guys.
A couple things in the chat real quick, because what we've got here. This is my first live stream period, John. Thank you so much. And no, I have not read any Michael Tillinger. And of course, big rolling home with the movie references or the music references. Yes, Stargate was very inspirational in the creation of this stuff. All right, Ancient Epoch, yes. Send Luke a shirt. And
you want one? I'll get some made up.
Illegitimate scholar wants to see you guys box. You and Flint, not you and Luke.
that'd be an unfair fight. He's not a fighter anyway.
We don't want to promote that.
None of them are, and that's the thing. You know, the internet warrior culture. When you want to sit there and tear people down with these accusations, that's what makes me mad. And that's what I'm saying. I don't mean this literally, but factually, the things that they say online, they say it because they're emboldened by being online. They're not in front of the person. And we saw that when he went on Joe Rogan and he was confronted with the things that he said. He turned tail and he ran the other way and he wouldn't man up to the things he had said. And he tried to change in real time what he actually said to something less than what he said. And, you know, that's what I talk about when it comes to this stuff, you know. So that's what I mean. Like, you know, yeah, Jimmy gets flack. He gets a lot of flack, you know. He likes to talk about politics. That's his thing, though. He does like to mix archaeology with politics. So I don't do that. You don't do that. I don't like to get involved in politics. I think that's a big lightning rod for a lot of people. They're going to come at him. I mean, obviously, he seems a little bit right-leaning from what I can tell. So most of this culture is to the left. So he's gonna hear it from that crowd.
We got one of the guys saying that you did, keep commenting on how great your video was on Good Uncle Dang, by the way.
Thank you. I put in about 80 hours on that video.
Yeah, I was watching you on Twitter release little tidbits. I was like, come on, get that thing out. And you're like, yeah, I got as much time as I got, bro. Sorry.
Yeah, I started off, I'm kind of in between right now. With how I want to do my videos, how I can get them produced and how I can get them out. I started with doing short narrated videos where it's basically like a slideshow and I present the information, but it really wasn't getting anywhere. And I thought they were worthy of getting somewhere. And, you know, I saw your style of the face forward, and you're not the only one. A lot of people, most people on YouTube are doing face forward videos where they're speaking to the camera. And I said, okay, I gotta change this around. I gotta do face forwarding videos. The very first one I did was the actual age of the pyramids, which is like, I still don't understand why that doesn't go anywhere. And not just for my own, not just because why doesn't that video go anywhere? Why doesn't the truth about the real age of the pyramids go anywhere? It just falls into this vacuous black pit where nobody wants to talk about it. And when we have carbon dating done on separate occasions, that if you average it out conservatively, it's 200 years. Liberally, it's 300 years. I won't even get into the 400 years. I'll just throw those right out there. So liberally, it's 3 centuries. Conservatively, it's 2 centuries older than the conventional 2560 roughly BCE deadline or timeline that they come up with. Nobody seems to care about this. And I'm just like, how does this not get any traction?
The Egyptologists, so that timeline is kind of the gold standard for written records as far as the ancient world goes. Like when they first tested carbon dating, they took it to ancient Egypt because they knew how old things were because of that written record. So it's a bit of speculation, but I'm of the opinion that thing's got to, it's just kind of put on a little bit of a pedestal in that community. And it's just like this written record is it's a lot of things are going to start falling apart if that written record's off. You know, a lot of their timelines and stuff are not going to work out as well.
Well, not even with I'm not even saying with the Egyptologists, forget them. Fuck them. How about the alternative people? The alternative people don't even give a shit that it's two, or 3 centuries older. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to hear 8,000 years older, right? They want to hear 10,500 BCE. That's what they want to hear, you know. Credit or discredit Graham and Robert Brevald because of that, you know, the precession of the equinoxes, the alignment of Orion's belt and all this, and, you know, 10,500 in the age of the Sphinx, Robert Schoch and all that popularized all this or that. Okay. I love that too. I love it to fucking death. I would love for it to be 10,500 BCE. That would be fucking awesome, but it's maybe not, but what it is 2850 BCE, 2950 BCE. And if that science is correct, which I think it is, because when Ed Casey's foundation did it, they said, hey, listen, we can't have this quack job putting out these bullshit dates out here. We got to get the adults in the room to come in and clean up this mess and let everyone know that it's actually 2500 BCE. So they sent in a real team, and they came back and they could only improve the dates by a century. So then they just memory hold the shit, right? Yeah. But for the alternative people, think about this. What's this mean? If it's 200 to 300 years older, when did Khufu build it?
Yeah.
When was Khufu alive? Was he alive or was he dead? You know, Matt, for Ancient Architects, he did this awesome video on the graffiti above the King's Chamber that was found with three different tiers. And he basically proves in this video, right, without a doubt, that it's not a forgery. It wasn't forged by the explorer who found it, that it's legit cartouches. And it's basically saying the crow workers of Khufu and all the different quarrymen gangs that gathered the stone and then sent it to the site. Okay, so if that's rock solid, something's got to be amiss. Either Khufu was 2-3 centuries older alive, or has been popularized in the alternative rumor sphere that the Great Pyramid was built in stages and Khufu only finished it. Now, there's no real proof of that other than conjecture, but there's some things that I find intriguing about that idea. When you cross-reference that, you have to admit that the cartouches are real. You have to admit that the carbon dating is real. So something is amiss. Now, something you brought up that I thought was like a home fucking run is that, does that mean it took 200 years to build the pyramid? So they started building it at 2850 BCE. And by the time they finished it, Khufu was the pharaoh that was alive when they put the capstone on, basically. And so he's the one who's credited with, because he was the pharaoh alive at the time. That could be. I like that. It makes more sense that they took 300 years to build that, or 200 years, than 20 years. I would rather sign up for that than the 20-year ridiculous date.
Oh, yeah, that's anybody that works with their hands knows that's crazy. Thank you, Shermanator. I appreciate that. Yeah, Luke Caverns is in the chat, if you didn't see that.
No, I'm not looking at the chat. Yeah, how you doing, Luke?
He's talking to you a little bit, talking to us anyway. But, yeah, you're dead on with that. To me, so many of the problems, not only so many of the problems go away with the timeline, so many of the things that alternate – I frequently refer to it as a gateway drug to being a pyramidian, is that pyramid building timeline. Because anybody who's built anything with their hands, you're like, oh, yeah, they did that in 20 years with no fucking machinery. And you're like, what? All right, well, now what are you going to sell me next? It's just, this is clearly stupid. This is just, that's the kind of thing that, anybody's worth construction just laughs at that shit. So it's the kind of thing that, for whatever reason, I'm clinging to it so hard. It doesn't just make them look bad in those regards. It actually kind of creates their enemies, so to speak, because it gives people that gateway into questioning, why are they so stupid? Why are they so ridiculous with this timeline stuff?
Yeah, you know, and that's where, you know, the term, I got into an argument with the usual suspects who I don't talk to anymore. By the way, I've unblocked all you guys, by the way. So just to let you know, I've decided to unblock mostly everybody except for one large account that was stealing my content. So I had to block him. But I don't, you know, I used to use the term academic, right? And I got into this big argument. What do you mean? What's academic mean? Like, didn't you go to college? Don't you have, aren't you an engineer? So what's academic mean? Well, I mean, people who take like social science classes, you know, I went to a technical school. So yes, I have an engineering degree from a technical school, right? I didn't learn social sciences. It was all math. It was all, you know, theoretical physics. It was all everything that had to do with what I needed to do my job at the end. So when I talk about academics, and I have a secret archaeologist in my corner, you people, that you don't know about. He's retired and he gives me a lot of good tips and a lot of good advice. He actually went on his own and learned math. But typically what I'm talking about is guys who don't understand construction, don't understand mathematics. They didn't have to learn this stuff. Like, you know, one of the things I remember also growing up hearing about discussions with ancient Egypt, it was, you know, what pharaoh was sleeping with who, and family interactions. It was like some kind of soap opera. They're always talking about, you know, this cousin and that, and, you know, like I don't give a shit about that. Tell me how they fucking built this shit, right? And the reason why they don't talk about it is because they can't. They just look at it and they say it's there. And they're like, well, they must have did it. It says there. And that's it. So they can't articulate it in any specific fashion. And so, yes, they do. They do invite it. And then when someone wants to come along and have alternative ideas, have alternative theories, they just get met with this derision. Now, this is – let me just caution this by saying there's a minority on vocal minority online group. We've all come into contact with them. We all know who they are. I'm not going to mention them. I don't know that this is the majority of archaeologists, researchers. I use archaeological research every single day. I read papers. Without them, I would have nothing. So I want to give them all credit. The people out there doing the real work, doing the science. I don't hate you guys. I think you're actually awesome. It's the vocal minority that we've come into contact with online that are antagonistic, that get aggravated over the most innocuous thing that you don't understand why they would even be pissed off about, but yet they are. And then you just waste your breath arguing with them and you don't even understand what the animosity is for. That's who I'm talking about. But the guys who I, you know, read papers, every time I download a paper from Academic EDU, they ask me, you know, say something to the author. I'm always thanking them. You know, thank you for putting your research out there. Thank you for making it available. I quote and source papers every single time. Whenever I put a post on my X account, I put the source of where I got the information from. So, you know, I'm an observer, right? I'm an observer. I'm not in the field. These people are in the field. I'm reading their data and I'm interpreting it and I'm bringing it to an audience in an interesting and fun way that I think we're all trying to absorb so we can learn something about our past that we didn't know before. And a lot of this stuff isn't taught in school. These guys that have these papers that are being published, it's buried somewhere, or even I love when they reference books from like the 18th century. Shout out to archive.org. Everybody go out there and sign the petition to stop the censorship of archive.org. Right now, there's a case going to the Supreme Court where they're basically going to take archive.org offline. And that is going to be a tremendous blow to so many people who don't have a degree at Harvard where you can click on and not have to pay $30 for a paper or a book or something like that. I use it. I have found so many fascinating books from the 18th century, early 19th century on there that a lot of these papers reference. One of them is this French team who came up with a paper that they think the Djoser Step Pyramid was built with a hydraulic lift. I don't think that's accurate, but they have a lot of tremendous information leading up to that hypothesis. Go ahead. I missed that.
Oh, sorry. As said, as is frequently the case, a lot of times I don't agree with the end results of an alternate hypothesis, but goddamn, is the information that's getting us there tantalizing, right? And that's one of my biggest complaints about the throwing out the baby with the bathwater. It's like, man, a lot of these guys are doing really good work, and because you don't agree with one part of it, you throw out everything. And that's just crap. I'll quickly answer Zycroptic here. I'm going to hopefully to have Matt on stream one of these days here before too terribly long. And we talked about me going to visit him again or do a live stream with him again in the future. So yes, that will be happening, but I'm not sure exactly when. I know he's a very busy man. So, but I definitely had a great time, so I am looking forward to it. And then we got a bunch of people saying, what was the one thing I thought that you might about the pyramids being built on older, potentially being built on older sites. What's your thoughts on that, Eric? So like you date the pyramids, but were the pyramids on older sites to begin with, an older foundation?
Well, that's interesting because the step pyramid itself was first a mastaba, right? And then it was a smaller size pyramid and then they expanded it. Yep. So that right there is intriguing. And that, you know, again, goes back to what I was saying about the Great Pyramid. you know, there's always this question about the Queen's Chamber. Like, what's the purpose of the Queen's Chamber? Why are there two chambers? You know, there's three pyramids, small pyramids, directly outside the three large pyramids on the plateau. Those were actually all Queen's pyramids, all three of those little ones. So why do they need an internal Queen's Chamber when they built three external miniature Queen's Chambers? And why do the shafts of the Queen's Chamber don't exit the pyramid? You know, you could take a look at how Djoser was, and again, this is speculation, there's no proof, sure, but people have speculated about this for a long time, that if you offset the Great Pyramid just a little bit, where the Queen's Chamber was actually the only funerary chamber, and the shafts did exit at that point. Also, why was the main entrance so ornate? Why was the main entrance with the chevron blocks so beautifully created, only to be covered up and blocked over at the end? So, you know, again, speculation, but with the fact that Djoser was a mastaba and then a smaller and then a larger pyramid, perhaps there was some expansion that took place. That could also account for the 200-300 year timeline that the carbon dating proved.
Yep. All right. Yeah. Quick. What was the thing he said here? Thought the paper on the pyramid. I thought there was a paper on the pyramids saying they were being built directly on bedrock. And yes, that is true. They are built directly on bedrock, but the area is carved out. So you can see where, if you were to magically remove the pyramid and all the isostatic depression was gone, there would still be a perimeter because they built it that way. So that's kind of, a lot of times, some people think that the pyramid's perimeter and stuff was laid out 10,000 years ago, like when a lot of people believe the Sphinx was carved. So that is one way that some alternate historians coincide the Orion Giza thing with reconcile the Orion Giza correlation being at 10,500 BC, how they'll reconcile that with the carbon dating. But the Orion Giza correlation, actually, though, there is at least one archaeoastronomer who's found a fourth dynasty correlation for that. So it kind of it does get more into the archaeology side of the archaeoastronomy because, you know, it's leaning on actual dating and stuff instead of just going off just the stars.
Yeah. So I like to bounce around, you know, just looking at this Djoser thing, you could literally spend a lifetime studying that complex. I mean, it is a honeycomb. It's Swiss cheese. They did shit there for a long time, multiple iterations of whatever they were doing. So, you know, you could do your field work on just that one location for a lifetime. But, you know, I like to bounce around. I like to look at different things. One of the areas I'm interested in is the migration into the Americas. You know, you had the Clovis timeline, which was rock solid, and now that's become porous. There's so many pre-Clovis sites, you know, New Mexico and so forth. There's a guy who just put out work showing pre-Clovis tooling in Maryland, which is on the East Coast, which is tremendous. I know there's nothing else like it. He was frustrated with the whole peer review process and didn't want his paper languishing for a decade, so he just published it anyways. I've talked about that a few times. There's this mastodon site, which I think is, I don't want to quote, but it's thousands of years older than what they say. I want to say 200,000 years, but I'm not sure about the time, but it's a mastodon site in North America where the bones were crushed with a tool. They have the tool, they have the crushed bones. They can't say whether or not it was Homo sapiens, because I guess there was primates in North America at that time, so there's potential that it could be a primate of some sort, but it definitely looks like more of something that you would see from human hands. One of the most interesting things I've come across is there's actually a region in northern Asia or Siberia the Baikal Lake in the Atlay Mountain Range area, where not only does DNA traces of Native American DNA trace back to that location, but also linguistics. So there's two separate papers dealing with two separate topics that trace Native American linguistics and Native American DNA to the same region. And what's interesting is I was digging through some of the tribes, you know, about 30,000 years ago that were there, and I came across a large artifact site that was found. And in that large artifact site that was found, there was a little figurine of a child amongst other figurines of children. And I posted it on my X, very similar to the figurines of the Olmecs. Most people associate the Olmecs with the giant heads, of course, that's what we've all heard about. But they also have these small figurines. There's one made out of jade of a person basically with a swaddled baby. And this swaddled baby looks very similar to this figurine of this child. And also there's been a lot of controversy about the ethnic appearance, right, of the heads. And, you know, nobody can, let's just be honest, right? You can't judge ethnicity by someone's facial features, right? That's not how we do it. That's not real science. But we're trying to take a swing at this thing. We're not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. We're not trying to be disrespectful. We're just trying to take a swing at this thing. What's more interesting besides the heads is that they have all these small clay statues of toddlers. The Olmec have this whole series of clay statues of toddlers, and they very much look Asiatic. You know, I would say, I don't know if that's the best term right now. There was a term I was actually asking my wife, because she's in the social services, so she knows like what are the proper things to name things. But back in the 80s, they would have said that they looked Mongoloid. That's what they would have said in the 80s. That's not a proper term anymore, so everyone don't get all pissy. I know that that's not a proper term anymore, but that's one of the things I think that Graham gets nailed with, is that we grew up, that's what they said. That's what people said, and it wasn't offensive. It wasn't offensive at the time. That was the term. But then later on, someone decided, okay, that is offensive. Now we have to change it. Yeah, and you should change with the times. Everyone should change with the times and not try to be disrespectful. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I'm trying to say that if I were to describe it now, that's the way they described it then. So maybe I could say Asiatic, and definitely, you know, the Mongols were from that area, right? Siberia. And so these Olmec toddler statues look very much like the region that the DNA and the linguistics point to. And I think that's huge, right? You know, because growing up, it was just like, well, there were these Native Americans and they were just kind of there, right? They were just there and they were there, right? And along came all the big bad people from, you know, Europe and everything like that. But no, where did they come from? They came from somewhere too. And there's this newer hypothesis, the Kelp Highway or the Pacific Coast hypothesis, which basically, you know, says that during the last ice age, not after, you know, where they crossed the Barren Bridge, they basically island hopped, if you would call it island. So little pockets of the shoreline were left unfrozen due to certain conditions where the water was at a specific elevation to remain warmer than the ice. So the ice would melt and peel back and leave a little bit of exposed land. And they would sail in these little boats and basically hop, skip along the shoreline, and wherever they saw the land, they would get off and they would forage for clams, they would fish, they would try to find, you know, whatever kind of food or wildlife they could to eat, and they would set up a camp, and then they would move along. And then they kept doing this all the way until they got to the bottom of the ice sheet in what's now California, and then made their way inland. So this is where the pre-Clovis migration potentially came from. And the DNA actually shows that there was a back and forth. So not only did they come here, the people who were there actually went back again. They bred again with the people that were back in this region and then came back again. So I think that's important, right? You know, to talk about, you know, where did the people who came here before the Europeans come from and how they get here. And I think one of the most ironic things about history, and this one I've always been thinking about lately, is that the DNA shows that these people had some Western European DNA from that time period, like 30,000 BCE. Mm-hmm. They had gone all the way from Western Europe over into Northern Siberia, and then they came to the Americas. So when you talk about when the Europeans came to America, they actually, when they met the Native Americans, those were their fucking ancestors. How wild is that? How wild is that when, and nobody knew this, right? How different could have history have been if they knew that when they came into contact with these people, that they were actually their prehistoric ancestors? I think that's pretty wild thing to think about.
It is pretty insane when the DNA stuff has just been pretty nuts year after year. The stuff that we saw recently that came out with Easter Island was really impressive, in my opinion. First of all, we got Ben Crisp wants us to discuss Gunung Padang some, and I know you've got a lot to say about that. But 1 second, I want to – we got one other super chat here. This is great. Loving the chat. H-Epoch, you know, I have a new follower. Kamwaset apparently started labeling pyramids so the builders wouldn't be forgotten, so should be some casing stones somewhere with inscriptions. All right. That's actually an idea there. Good chance when they were looting those things in the early days, when the archaeology was half looting and half that's the kind of thing that could have been a paperweight pretty easily, a nice little chunk of rock. That's a little bit speculative on my part.
I found old textbooks that would have just strewn about on the ground blocks with quarrymen's marks on them. They were quite commonplace. In fact, there's an article on Graham's website where there's a researcher who's still sticking to the forgery hypothesis that Weiss Pering could have found some quarryman marks on blocks strewn about outside the pyramid and then copied them and then went up and wrote them in there, because there is two blocks up in a corner together that have sort of a running cartouche between them that is actually two or three different cartouches, and it doesn't make any sense. And his claim is that you're working there in candlelight, you know, pitch black, and you're trying to draw something, and then you screw up, and then you realize you screwed up, and then you continue on to the next block and you make your correction, but by then it's too late. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thought. It can't really be proven. But to that point, the recent chamber that was found, right, from the Skans Pyramid project that's above the main entrance, there's pretty good video through that little camera that was fed up through there. I can't see any quarryman blocks on that, which I find there's no quarryman cartouches or anything written on those blocks, and they weren't meant to be seen by anybody else either. So that's, to me, is a curious little dichotomy there between the blocks that are above the relieving chambers that have the quarryman cartouches that were found, but yet on this new hidden chamber that's been recently revealed, you can't see any quarryman blocks cartouches at all, or marks at all. So that's an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the great things about, or frustrating things I should say, about the ancient Egypt stuff is how much of it was just kind of disappeared by the experts. Like how all these vases that are floating around out there in the world and stuff that have sketchy provenance, tons of these artifacts. And it's all because in the early days, it's like, yeah, you're, I'm just going to take this chunk of rock home with me and this little statue with me and give this to my kid and to my grandma and all this bullshit. But
the dynamite phase.
Yes, it is one thing worth mentioning. You did the Gunung Padang thing. You did quite an in-depth video on Gunung Padang, like we were talking about earlier, but we did kind of brush past it. Why don't you go ahead and get into that a little bit before we run out of time?
Okay, sure. Well, basically, you know, I think that Danny Hillman and his team did a without no pun intended, a rock solid job. I mean, they spent countless years there. And I think a lot of people, you know, as you pointed out, they missed the supplemental document, which really bolstered their claims. I think there was a loss in translation factor there when we're talking pyramid, because, you know, as I started off my video, it all depends on what you want to define as a pyramid. It's more of a mountain that was terraformed and with stepped terraces by human hands than anything else. But the fact remains that if you're going to take a look at the very top layer, which I think the top one or two layers, archaeologists mainstream don't deny are created by human hands. There's human intervention there. The andesite volcanic rock was laid out in a specific formation by human hands. If that's accepted, and then you find that same exact format of the rock down on lower levels, then you have to conclude that both are equally acceptable as being created by humans. And then when you carbon date the mortar, and the mortar comes back with dates of 9,500, 9,800 BCE, then those are the dates. I mean, there's clear mortar on the volcanic rock that's been laid out on these lower terraces on the outside. You know, the controversial part is the core drills that go from the top down into the soil. And a lot of that, I think I proved without a doubt that it's being misinterpreted intentionally, because there is rock walls and things that they found at these levels. They also claim that there is no artifact. This is where I get into the semantics argument with traditional archaeology. If you're saying the wall was made by humans, right, that should be considered a quote-unquote artifact, in my opinion. If all archaeology is looking for pottery shells, we're not going to fucking get anywhere. Like, pottery shards, excuse me. Like, my whole life, I've basically looked at archaeology as, like, the defining pottery. Like, pottery is not... Yes, they didn't find pottery when they did the cores drill samples, but they drilled right through a fucking boulder that was part of a wall that somebody built. And then they found organic material underneath that boulder, and therefore they have a date. So look, not everything is going to be a beautiful figurine or a piece of pottery. We have to expand our horizons and expand our ideas of what we're going to use to determine man-made in order to date something. And if the wall was built by a human, then okay, that's an artifact in my opinion.
I would have to agree with you on that. Yeah, your video did do a good job of talking about the filter and stuff. At the very least, like I said, when I watched it, it took me from being of the opinion that the 25,000 year thing was just off the table to being like, okay, we need to get some people back out there and poke around a little bit. And that's a pretty, I mean, not to make a big deal about it, but it's a kind of a big deal to me, because it's not, I do change my position frequently when I see new evidence, but that one seemed pretty sewn shut on that regard. So that was impressive. So good on you on that one, Eric. They got a couple of quick super chats here. We got to ask, we got to answer, how different would our history be if they didn't destroy or hide everything in the Vatican's basement? I know that there's like some to that, but I don't really know. Like, that one's one where the fog of misinformation and the real info really blends so heavily, it's hard to say what they got and what they don't. And I don't think they have.
Yeah, I'm not a big, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I'm not a real big, like, the Vatican took away everything guy. I don't follow that. You know, again,
that's fine.
Religions are, there's religions all across the board, right? It seems that obviously they're a lightning rod for everybody. I was raised Roman Catholic, but I also understand that studying ancient history, that we all create, all peoples all across the globe have created religions to explain their place in the world, to explain their moral coil. I don't think any of it should be vilified more than any other one, nor should anyone be taken more serious than any other one based upon that. Where everybody is just trying to explain why we're here in some way, and this is why religions exist. So the Vatican is the big, bad, evil one who's hiding all these things to try to keep us in the dark. You know, that gets into the whole, you know, I could have been a conspiracy theorist guy if I wanted to do that too. But I just think that ends up putting you in a negative place. I don't want to live in a negative place.
I understand that. And we've got one, what we got here from David Stig Hansen. Sniffing around your Twitter, I've been to the Rychat structure, Eye of Africa, 3 times and found ancient quarries all over, including went to the ones that Carlson mentions, and then he gives some measurements here. So make sure that people, if you care in the chat, the chat's nowadays on YouTube. You should be able to just find it if you're watching this not live. If you just clue the chat in, it should show you this comment here. And then, yeah, if you're interested in those measurements, there they be. So thank you for that. The right chat's one that I'm interested in, but I don't think that the similarities to the shape of that Plato describes in Atlantis is like enough to really hang my hat on or really run with it. But the fact that it looks the way it does, and that it is interesting when people show up there, that there's not a lot of archaeology done right in that area. And I'm sure I'm going to get some archaeologists coming. Well, actually, you know, but there's not very much work done there. It's one of the parts of the world where if you're going to travel someplace, it's not high on your list. And for more than one reason, there ain't a whole lot to look at, and you might get shot doing so. So it's just all around. It's interesting to me, but I don't take it to the it is Atlantis that some people do. But it is an interesting sight to me. And one of those places, to be honest, that I people dig into. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. I'm sorry to interrupt. There's enough on that I let people, you know, my opinion on that, and it's been documented, is that it's a geological feature. I agree with the mainstream on that one, that it's a geological feature. To your point, archaeologists have pointed out that there are settlements, you know, there's a lot of like square, you know, remnants of settlements on top of the research structure that are much newer, because the research structure is millions of years old. It's also massive. The sheer scale of it is tremendous. I think even if you wanted to say that they built Atlantis on top of this geological feature and sort of enhanced it, and then it was blown away, which I would think would be the more plausible. And I don't know the exact theory, because again, as I stated in the beginning of this, I like to keep my powder dry, as they say. I don't follow a lot of other people's content, and because I don't want my mind, you know, kind of filled with their ideas. I want to have my own ideas. But as I've tepidly looked at it, again, I think it's a geological feature. It's millions of years old. It's actually massive. But if they built on top of it in whatever 13,000 BCE and enhanced it, and then somehow it got wiped out, if you wanted to go with that, I would say that's your most plausible option. But I leave the Reshark guys to the Reshark guys.
That makes sense. Mike and Neri asks again, they said they retract Vatican basement and substitute it with Smithsonian basement. Now, what do you think? Do you think the Smithsonian's got some shit they're hiding from us?
Yeah, so the whole thing with, like, the giants, right? There's all these old clippings, and I don't know how real they are or not, where they were, you know, they found a giant here, they found giant bones there, they found a giant skeleton here, they found a giant skeleton there, and the Smithsonian was on their way to come collect all of it and bring it in, right? I've seen these clippings. I don't know what to make of them. I referenced the Smithsonian Institute, as I mentioned earlier, when it came to that stone tool reference that I compared to the Kujang stone dagger. And I got a lot of people coming at me with that kind of stuff that, you know, don't mention, oh, you lost me at Smithsonian. You lost me right there. I don't want, after you say Smithsonian, I don't want to hear anything more about it. I don't know. To my knowledge, are, you know, were they just trying to sell newspapers in the 1800s? You know, possibly, or even when these newspapers were, was it like, you know, type sort of way to sell papers? Who knows? There is an interesting Native American or indigenous people legend of a large tribe of people that were larger than them. There's a famous drawing of them slaying this guy and dragging him across the ground with his like heart coming out of his chest. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we want to look at oral traditions with more hinge of truth to them than fabricated. Yeah, maybe there was a tribe of pretty tall natives. It's possible. It's possible. But there's the Smithsonian like hiding the bones so that we all don't know about it. I don't know.
But, you know, my opinion on like the Giants thing, I think, like Hetty says here in the chat, where they maybe set 9 feet tall tops. I'm more of the opinion myself that if there were Giants, that would be about like, you know, there's some taller humans or something. And if, and this is getting pretty speculative, if that was the case, those bones would be the kind of thing that would, you put them in the newspaper and you travel back from the freaking bush. And I mean, that's out in the desert back in the day when there's no highways crisscrossing the country, right? So you come back after riding your mules and whatnot, and it's, you know, 2 weeks later, by the time you get back to the next real town, boy, you've got a few telegrams waiting from players with deep pockets that are like, disappear them fucking bones, buddy. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, no problem. Sold. And Zahi Hawass that shit right away and set yourself up for retirement.
My devil's advocate, but why, to anyone in that who believes that, and not directly at you, Dan, but
yeah,
why? Why would they want to hide that there was giants? I don't know. Is,
oh, no.
The it's, government that, doesn't.
I'm still more thinking of collectors is what I'm getting at. I want to have those. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's I did a video recently on the largest Clovis point. That's not, it was found.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay. Well, they want almost 300 grand, right? Because it's so big, it's unique. And so when you start, I've got the tallest American skeleton in the tallest indigenous American skeleton prehistoric times. That's the kind of thing where that's what I mean. When he shows up to town, he's got like 4 telegrams from different collectors that are like, hey man, I don't think the Smithsonian would be the one to get it. I think it'd end up in a Rockefeller basement. If such a thing were to exist to begin with.
Yeah,
but we're getting close to being out of time. Go ahead. Finish up the thought there. Sorry.
No, I mean, I just think, you know, those people would be long dead by now, right? And then someone would have found these giant bones in Granddad's basement or the attic or something and went to hawk them for, you know, some drug money or something. Who the fuck
that
knows?
Possible.
But,
that is possible.
You know, because, you know, all this stuff gets found, you know, by the grandkids.
Yeah.
I don't know. You tell me the motivation. I have a coworker who always says, you know, what's the motivation for this reasoning? You know, tell me the motivation of why they would want to hide it. I got in an argument with someone on a space because basically they were talking about the same type of conspiracy thing, whether it be the Vatican, whether it be the Smithsonian, in this case, it was the quote unquote government is hiding like this and that and the other thing. I just don't think they're competent enough to hide anything, quite frankly. And I just think that there's so many different people. It'd be like the craziest conspiracy of all time to have tens of thousands of people who come in and out of these institutions. All of them get sat down and told, hey, listen, if you don't, you know, talk about this, there's going to be a whistleblower eventually.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, we've got 4 minutes basically till we're going to tie this up. So why don't you go ahead and everybody just link to his channel down below if you haven't found it yet. But go ahead and tell people where to find you and all that jazz.
Yeah, at Ancient Epoch on X, at Ancient Hypothesis on YouTube. My YouTube is linked on my X. I have a little TikTok, but that really is not doing much anymore. But that's where you can find me. I look forward to my next video coming out. It's going to be about the Step Pyramid at Djoser and what was going on there in antiquity. And I think it's going to be something that is going to really be exciting because it's sort of advanced technology. Maybe not what you're thinking about, not electricity or laser beams, but definitely advanced technology for something that was made 2600 BCE. If that's the date they were made.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this has been great. So I guess closing thoughts, we'll go ahead and see what we got here. There's still a lot of people talking about the Rye Chat and stuff. That is an interesting place. Again, it's just that we need to, I'd like to see more research done in these things. That's always where I'm at. Now, now they've got people talking about Magellan, talking about mermaids and fish and giants and all that. So, yeah, it's we got both cans of worms open now.
Well, one of my latest posts, they think that there's an Atlantis sister site in Andalusia, Spain, that's currently being abandoned and covered by development. They contractors have bought up the land, and they're going to be building a hotel over the top of it. So there's a group trying to rescue the site right now. But the archaeological evidence shows that it was built in concentric rings with moats. So there's not just one Atlantis.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, if you really think about it, if a lost civilization were to have got wiped out 12,000 years ago, the game of telephone mixed with the mythology and the woo side of it, you know, these are gods, these are great men of old and all that shit, it's going to get pretty convoluted after 1,000 years, no, let alone 12. So it does make sense that it would be, in my opinion, it's more likely not nearly as advanced as a lot of people think, and probably more like a lot of little, just like it is if we all got wiped out today and the people that were hunter-gatherers living close to the land, like Hancock always likes to talk about, if they were the only survivors, they would remember us as one people. But with the French and the Americans and the Chinese and the Japanese and the Iraqis, all these different technologically advanced cultures, but we would be one, especially 10,000 years from now. In my opinion, I think that's pretty clear. But yeah, thank you. This has been great, man.
Appreciate it, Dan. That was an easy conversation. I probably could go another hour, but I know you want to keep it for an hour for your format.
Yeah.
Good luck in the future. Good luck with your future guests. Congratulations on your success. I haven't congratulated you. Congratulations on your success, and keep it going. And yeah, let's all keep looking in the past, and maybe we'll find where we're going in the future.
That's a good way of putting it. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, everybody, and you guys have a good night. We'll see you next time.
Good night, everyone.